Okay, welcome to Constantly Varied, episode 39. It's been a few weeks and I'm feeling rusty, out of practice. This is going to get clunky.
I just got really panicky. We haven't done this in a while, yeah.
Absolutely. So we're going to have a fun chat today. We're actually going to talk about fun and training. Yay. The role fun plays. We're also going to have some recommendations, which rather is the usual segments. But before we get into it all, make sure you follow us on Spotify. Give us an L5-star review if you ever think about it.
Go on, Jamie. Look at you go.
Oh, look at me. I almost forget every single time I remember it again. We're joined today with Pa White. How's it going? It's been a while since you've been on.
I've been more hippopotamus in the gym since the last time.
So, Pa, we've just been watching some, what's it called?
If Planet Earth, if Dehealy Ray's on it versus David Attenborough.
So, there's our first recommendation. That's on Instagram, is it?
Yeah, Bernard Casey.
Deadly. It's worth checking out. That was a funny one this morning. How's it going, Pat? How's life? Are you were just in London the weekend. Was it good, correct?
I was, yeah. I'm recently married, Jamie, as you know.
I've heard that, yeah.
Yeah, so been good. Getting back into training buzz again, though, so it's kind of finding my feet.
Deadly. Yeah, yourself and Gillian got on the, like we need to get back to this training vibe, didn't you?
Yeah, especially, like, after 23.1 or 24.1. Sorry, I'm a year behind. Okay, it was just, that was humbling. Like, last week was a bit of a saving grace, so hopefully it's just kind of set me up now to kind of gear my own training and forward.
Yeah, sometimes it takes doesn't it, like one of those you run into your own reality. You go, oh my God, I need to get back on this.
Yeah, and then you've seen people down, like, Nace, they were finishing ahead of me, like, oh, I'm so disappointed. And they were going scaling the work on, you're like, yeah, good stuff.
So it's been going, has training been going better since then, the last week?
Yeah, more or less. So I think I've, like, nine or ten training sessions.
Oh, wow.
Runs, like, yeah. So.
Okay, so you're flying.
Hopefully.
Okay, daddy. And James, we were here all weekend. We were internshipping.
We were indeed, yeah.
Yeah, that was great, wasn't it?
Yeah, it's going fantastic. Like, seeing the progress, this is obviously very different to the last however many we've done, but seeing the progress in them is unreal, isn't it?
It's funny, we're halfway in now, and three months...
Wow, we're halfway.
We're halfway, yeah. And I was only talking to Doreen about this, saying that in the other internships, it feels like people are all like Bambi, Bambi, Bambi until the very, like 80% in.
Yeah.
And then there's this hump they get over and all of a sudden they look like coaches. Mm. Do you remember every time?
Vividly.
Yeah. And I think it's happening earlier this time that we're starting to see. I just sent a message into the group saying, like, this weekend I came away, not that everybody took this massive leap forward, but they're already too. I think this month is the month that they're going to actually leap into it, because there was just this different level of getting it. There's a level of confidence, there's a level of knowledge starting to be accumulated, that if they just step into the role of it now in their heads. So I just love seeing that moment where people are turning into something new.
Yeah, there was a few moments over the weekend where there was... glimpses probably isn't even the right word, but there were just very obvious things where you were like, oh, you're seeing this in a totally different way than you were at the start of the weekend compared to now. And say, you might be almost nearly ready to coach.
Absolutely.
Yeah, those big things. It's cool.
Yeah, and it's very exciting for me because I'm just watching people going, these could be colleagues soon.
Yeah.
Which is very cool. They're like some really, some people with amazing backgrounds.
Yeah, that's funny because I had a moment like that at the weekend too. I was like, oh, we could be working together.
Yeah.
That's weird. You won't be the intern and I'm your mentor anymore. It would be, oh, we work together.
Yeah.
I can come to you for help.
Yeah, it's cool. It's very cool to see it. So I'm delighted with how that's all going. Yeah. But intense weekends, aren't they?
Serious weekends.
Yeah, you can see everybody comes in a bit fried.
Like dead on Monday morning, yeah. Ozzy always comes in to half five class on Monday morning as well after that long weekend. And it's like, what do you need today? He's like, probably just, a hug. And Ozzy's such a big unit of a lad. He's like, don't push me today. I just need to sweat and tell me I'm doing great.
Yeah. So let's get on to the open here for a second. I just want to talk about it for 2 or 3 minutes, right, quickly. Because it's been an odd one so far, hasn't it?
Yeah.
Like, I think it's been really good. But in terms of the programming and the workouts that have come along, very different than other years. There's obviously a change in programming philosophy from the games team. I think the vital difference this year is they've opened up the next stage of it to 25% of people, not 10%, which has made the first two, and I would suspect even the third one, to be a lot more accessible than usual. Yeah. They're not so worried about trying to separate everybody with these three workouts. They're saying that if they're going to get 25 people to go forward, most everyone who should go forward will.
Yeah.
And then they're going to start separating people out in that next stage.
In that next stage, yeah.
So I would expect that this week, it could be a horror show because of how little has been coming up so far. But I still have this feeling that maybe we'll all go, oh, that's fine too.
Yeah.
And then we'll have three kind of good workouts that are accessible that everyone can have a good swing at. And then the next stage is going to ramp up quite a lot. How have you been finding it, James?
I always have such mixed emotions about the Open, where like I come into, especially recently in the past couple of years, I come into going, like I always want to do well. I have that competitive nature in me, but I'm like, I've not been training for it. I've not been doing extra, like I've not done anything extra around it. I don't care where I finish. And then the first workout happens and all I care about is where I am on the leaderboard. And it's like, oh,
that's so funny.
And I'm always trying to manage it. Because what I think I'm quite good at as a coach as well is talking to my people and getting them out of their own way and helping them recognize the progress they've made. And, well, look at these conditions that you've been in and the progress and all of that jazz. And I'm the way we all are, I'm bad at doing that for myself. So, like, I train an average of 3 times a week. Last year, it was less than 3 times a week it averaged out as. I was like, and I'm still up there getting decent scores. I was sick last week. Like, I couldn't see for the first part of the week. I got a chest infection. I'm still coughing. And I still got a good score. But I walked away kind of going, oh. And there's just that side of it where you're like, yeah, but I know I can do more.
Mm-hmm.
And in the moment, I couldn't. Like, I emptied, absolutely emptied the tank on Friday and the week before. And in the moment, I'm like, that's all I could do. And then as soon as you get a moment to reflect, you're like, it's all I could do based on where I was at. But it was like 100% of my 80% rather than of my 100%, you know?
Yeah.
So there's that internal wrestle that I'm having all the time.
And I think if you've been really competitive with the Open in the past, it's hard to switch gears to being less competitive and still that competitiveness, that element doesn't go away.
It never leaves.
It never leaves, yeah. Whereas for me, I've never really cared about the position of the Open. So for me, it's about being involved and participating and just everybody doing the same thing together.
Yeah.
And you know, the people being a little bit more nervous than a regular day's workout and all of that stuff. So I just think it's been quite a bit of fun this year.
Yeah.
If, it's all a little less consequential. And I think in some ways, that's a huge improvement. Because when it's really consequential, like it's the focus of the year, I think there's a lot of negative emotions around it. A lot of stress.
Way too much stress.
Way too much for what it is. So it's good that some of that has been taken out of it. It's good that people can come in and take on the challenge without it being life or death.
Yeah. And so you think, like, you even reverse back, 5 years, like pre-COVID, it was 5 weeks and a lot more complex. Whereas now it's down to 3 weeks. And then this year, as you said, they've alluded, like, it's much less complex what they're doing. Not that it's easy, but dumbbell snatches and burpees, rowing, deadlifts and double unders aren't, like, they're very common in every CrossFit gym that most people can do compared to, like, even last year there was wall walks, double unders and snatches in a workout. That's more complex. And the year before, muscle ups, chest to bars, all of that jazz. So
yeah. And I think what's been interesting as well at week one and week two has been very similar.
That happened the other year as well. Do you remember that? It was the deadlift and the burpee and the wall walk, dumbbell snatch, box step over one. It was a two hingy type workouts.
Yeah, and it's like not too heavy, not too light. It's sort of matched up with a cardio exercise. It's a very similar type of thing, you know? So this week, you'd imagine a big swing in a different direction. A lot of squatty stuff, a lot of hanging gymnastics.
Did you see the hint Dave Castro put out last night?
Was this the chicken?
The chicken leg, yeah.
Chicken leg. I wonder, is that being like devoured by a dog wing, for a bar muscle up or something?
I was thinking, like, just even legs getting toast, like roasted, torn apart.
I think probably all of that, yeah. As I said to the comp crew last Saturday, it's probably going to be Fran soup. It's going to be every type of thruster you can think of, every type of hanging gymnastic you would imagine. Pat, how's it going for you so far? I know that week one was a wake up call. Was week two any better?
Well, yeah, since I kind of suited people over 6 foot, week two it did kind of carry on.
It did.
Yeah, no, it was like that, kind of like James said, kind of battling with the kind of elements of you're competitive, but you're trying not to be. And like, I've had a couple of days there now where I'm like, yes, I'll go in, I'm going to redo the work, I'm going to do better. And then I'm like, is that more of a reflection of how I performed or a reflection of the strategy I've approached the workout? And I'm kind of tying my own head then that it's like turn around after a basketball game, a football game, be like, oh, sorry, we lost that game, but you don't mind if we redo this on Sunday and let's see if our strategy works against you. Kind of, and I've kind of just kind of come to the conclusion now that in that present moment, that's the best I have. Mm-hmm. Even if I'm internally knowing that I could do better myself, it's, yeah, look, on that day, I've given that. I've yes. got fitness in, like you said, like participation. And I remember 24.1 and like looking at you doing the inchworm burpees. And I was like, he is having the time of his life.
Yeah.
He is loving this. And I am just in the pits of despair.
The pits of despair. That's a great way of putting it.
But like at the end of the day, it's what, 20 minutes, 15 minutes of workout. It's something we're lucky enough to be able to do.
Yeah.
And I think when you kind of start viewing it like that, irrespective of where you finish on the leaderboard, where you finish overall, you've got a bit of exercise and you've got a bit of fitness in, and like you've just moved.
Yes.
No, you can't move for 2 days afterwards, but you've moved. There's that trade-off.
No, I think you've nailed it there. That's exactly it. So I also think the retest, you know, the repeat on the Sunday thing, some people, I think, get an awful lot from that. And I think there's no harm in it. I think where the value will be in 6 months when we retest, that's where the open workouts for me are becoming more valuable, because they are things that we test something and then we get to train for it.
You hinting at something there, Jamie, are you?
Never. Never, never, never.
Retest in 6 months. Ooh.
Well, we did it last year. Yeah. We did the open and then we repeated in the summer one of the workouts, and I thought it was really successful because we got to say, well, what if we got to prepare for where would we be? And can we use it as a template to build new capacities? That's clearly defined. And I wouldn't be surprised if we do something similar this summer as well. So, I think week three is almost done. Let's stay focused on it, get the third one in the bag, and then it's a successful open.
Yay, fitness.
And then we can go celebrate on Saturday night. I know there's a lot of celebrations planned. It's Patrick's weekend. The rugby's on. The whole lot, so we can get to go and sit down and just have a bit of crack with each other. So I'm looking forward to that. On next quarter, the plans are very well advanced for what we're going to train for. I am really excited about next quarter. I try not to think too much ahead because we got to get this job done first, but I can't wait to get those things finalized, tell everyone about it, and we'll see a good switch in gears in the training.
Yeah.
And we can start really focusing on building new capacities. So,
having seen some snippets of this, like you've ran some ideas past me, I'm very excited for next quarter. I can't wait.
I can't wait for it. It's going to feel like a good gear shift, I think. Okay, let's talk about our main topic today then. Main topic today is fun, of all things.
I told Gary this morning. Mm-hmm. You know, Gary's always like, yay, fitness, I'm just here to have fun, that thing. And because he's like, I do come here to have fun, and it stresses him out, so he uses that as a thing. And whenever I told him this morning, his jaw dropped, his eyes lit up, and he just got so excited.
Really?
Yeah. So we better put on a good show here for even just for Gary.
No pressure. Well, like, Gary's a great example of someone who embraces the fun of training, and he's one of the people who's making most progress as a result, because he brings passion and enthusiasm to his training sessions every day, because he brings that into the gym with him. He's not relying on it being there for him. So I thought we might start off with just talking about the role fun plays, because my experience of it in gyms like this is that there's some people who really embrace it, but there's a vast majority who get a bit sniffy about it. And you'll even see when we talk about, we talk to coaches in interviews, one of the things we talk about is different attributes of coach. And being entertaining as a coach is one of the attributes they have to decide where it ranks in importance. And for almost everyone, it's at the bottom of the list, like last or second last for almost all the coaches. And it's an interesting attitude we develop, that like, I'm not here to entertain people, I'm here to get them fitter. And there's an element where it's true, but the best way to get people fit is to keep them engaged in the process long term. And if it's all just hard all the time, the long term thing goes away very quickly. As much as we all think we're very disciplined, we need to have a payoff, and we need to look forward to going somewhere, and we need to have something to go to the gym on the hard days. So I'm just wondering then, for you, James, where does it fit in your head then as a coach?
It's funny you mention that, because I can very distinctly see phases of my training career and my coaching career where I've put fun very high up on the list and where I've put it very low down on the list. And my coaching drastically changes depending on where I've put it, and how I approach training drastically changes depending on where I put it. And because of that, results are very different, and overall enjoyment and probably satisfaction is very different along the way as well. So I can remember going through the phase of being very serious as a coach, or trying to be very serious as an athlete as well, and almost pushing people away because of it. It was like, if you're not taking this serious enough, get out, type thing.
Yeah.
Even whenever I was there as an athlete, it's like, don't, like, we're clean. Look, why are you trying to talk to me? Pa, leave me alone. I'm warming up. And it was like, as soon as I walked in, it was laughs, laughs, laughs. And then going from a reception area to the gym floor, it was a gear change, and not in a beneficial way. And I think whenever I recognized that, I maybe swung the other way really hard and tried to counterbalance it too much, and went, all training should be fun, therefore I'm not going to roar at anybody, I'm not going to shout at anybody, I'm not going to be demanding of anybody. And that was a big thing at one stage. You were asking me to do, Jamie, and my coach, and you were like, everything's nice, but it's nice. It's like, can you be more demanding of people in their, like, ask them to get their heels down again and again and again and again. And it was that little thing, I went too far, and the same with my training. And it's funny, the same thing probably happened where I probably wasn't as fun to be around because I wasn't taking training serious at all. I was being a distraction. I was probably holding people back. I was probably really fucking off the coach, all that jazz. And it's like, oh, both of them have their negativities, and it's like trying to find this middle ground where, yes, training's important. Yes, we're here to make progress. Yes, fun's important. Yes, we're here to socialize. But it's not one or the other. It's trying to get that middle thing of both.
Yeah, there's a sweet spot, isn't there?
Yeah, and it's I find it really hard, honestly. It's one of those things that I do very consciously think about. And there's days where I go, not today. I'm going full, very often on an Olympic lifting day. And I think you're pretty similar to this as well, Jamie, where I'm just like, we're not having fun today. The fun is the fact that you'll be better the next time we try this. And I'm happy to sacrifice that other times. I do try and balance out the week where I'm like, if I know that I've had one or two serious days between Monday and Wednesday, I'm like, Thursday, I have to bring something different for Thursday and Friday. Mm-hmm. And that comes from, for me, it comes from how I structure the session, how much space I give people, and what drills I tend to ask them to do. Like, is it something where they really have to focus, or is it like, right, Pa, go off and practice now with Jamie, and you have 4 minutes, and just make sure your elbows are straight. And it's really simple, but they have a focus point, but they get to have a bit of crack while they're doing it as well.
Yeah, and I think that, like, getting that balance is the hard bit.
Yeah,
it reminds me, there was a point in time with the gym overall where we probably had to take a big step forward in terms of professionalizing the business.
Yeah.
And there was a point where we had to take everything a little bit more seriously. And then we had to take ourselves seriously, we had to take our processes seriously. And it was really important step for the gym. And yeah, in that period of time, probably a lot of the fun went out of, yeah, working here as well. I relate strongly to that. And now I think we take ourselves and our role more seriously than ever, but I've never had more fun in work as well. So, you know, it takes a bit of time. Like you said, it's probably a bit of exploring both sides of, yeah, it to develop it. But if you don't think of the fun bit of it,
doesn't happen.
It can just go the other way. And I think that's, like, the reason we're talking about this today is because, Pa, you're reading a book, right? And you were
a book, singular book, just to clarify that.
A singular book, yeah. You read a book. Well done. but you brought it up as a topic, and it really, this is a few weeks ago we were talking.
Yes.
And I was like, yeah, it's such a giant piece of it. We actually have it as part of our coach assessments when we're actually assessing a coach's performance in a class as well. Like, entertainment is one of the five things. Was it a fun class to be in? So it's been a constant part of a process here. But do you have I know you coached the coaches here a couple of weeks ago,
yeah,
as part of your development. You had to prepare this big thing, you brought us all together, you coached us for 20 minutes, and what was really clear to me in that session was it was a really focused training session, but man, it was fun.
Yeah.
And it wasn't that the training was fun, you were fun. I actually was enjoying being in your presence. I liked how you delivered everything, and you injected it very purposefully all the time. So I'm wondering, is this something that's been a mainstay? Is this a result of you reading a bit more about it? Where does it sit for you now, your coaching?
It's probably a bit of both. I think my personality itself is that bit lighthearted. Like, if you want to harp back to when you interviewed me, whatever way you want to look at it. But that was probably 2-3 hours of us talking, and it felt like no time had passed. And I think that's the probably one thing that I found with fun, is that you actually lose that sense of time, you lose where it was going. And like, even that 20 minute piece, for me, it felt like an hour, but it was like I was in the zone, like, don't really know how much value you would have got from it. But at the end of it, you could see you're all lighthearted, jovial, but you're moving well. And I think you're not that down on everything. And like, I think probably one of my best sessions, I think, to coach today, it was a lifting session down in Nace, and Amy was actually in it. It was kind of one of the days we were doing coaching practice down there, and it was music that made the class fun more so than my coaching itself. And it was the music choice was ABBA, Everything Like This, and it was a push jerk class. So like you're saying, the Olympic lifting stuff, it's like, oh, we're going to be serious there. But I've taken the opposite side of it. It's like, if people are too serious there, when they lift and they miss, they're very dramatic in terms of, oh, I've missed that lift. But if the music is somewhat enjoyable, I just remember turning around at one stage and Amy was like, this music's like very lighthearted for this. And I was like, yeah, but look at Izzy. She's missed her lift and now she's twerking in the corner. It was like, she's disassociated the failure to a bit of enjoyment back into the class, and people were enjoying themselves that much. And I still think, like, yes, there's that element of inherently people are either fun or they might deem themselves as serious, but they still have that bit of wittiness to them, which is an element of fun, and also the reading element of it that I've just kind of been able to dial in. No, I'm not trying to force fun on anyone. Like, I'm not trying to spoon feed people and be like, take this in. No.
Yeah.
But it's creating opportunities where it might flourish or it might just happen itself and just spring on.
So it sounds to me like, from that description, like there's this big playful element comes into it, right? That session is more playful because of the music.
Yeah.
So do you want to dive into any part of that? Like, I know that you have a description. Is it a definition of fun or?
Well, I have the book, Jimmy. That's the main thing.
Okay.
Yeah. So like, if everyone wants to kind of know what it is, like, it's the kind of signs you want to watch out for, or kind of just to know when you're having it, because in fairness, the book does describe true fun and fake fun. So it does clearly delineate between the two. Like, fake fun is, I look at my phone, I go on Instagram for a second, and then it's 2 hours later, I'm still scrolling. And I have 4 dogs and 3 horses bought for some reason. But it's also like the thing that I get a dopamine response to looking at my phone, but I also get the cortisol response of, where is my phone? Where is it? Versus like, what true fun is, laughter, a sense of relief, freedom, letting go, feeling like you have a special shared experience, losing track of time, feeling free from self-judgment and self-consciousness, feeling like you've temporarily stepped out of normal life, being fully absorbed and present, not caring too much about the outcome, a feeling of childlike excitement and joy, a positive boost in energy, and feeling totally yourself. And it's very, like, it's very detailed, but there's always moments where you can kind of like, yes. And it's usually that, I think we can all harp back to some memory in our life that even outside of training is like, oh yeah, that was fun. And like, I know for myself, probably in a training context, was probably one of my favorite times training was when I was younger, and just going to the field with a football. for 2-3 hours kicking a ball, like imaginary friend defending you or something like that, because your real friends won't come with you. But, but you were there for 3, 4, 5 hours just doing something that mm-hmm. was enjoyable, and there was no real, I wasn't winning the match, I wasn't, it was just, I was kicking the ball over a bar, kicking the ball into a net, kicking the ball into a field.
Yeah,
and it was just like, I was just lost in it.
Yeah, so it makes me think about then, in a class environment, you know, I was in a class last Thursday, Miguel, Thiago, Jose were all in the class with me, and Amy was coaching. And Amy was on one of those humors where she had that, you know, that humor, she gets that really dry, very funny, like there's 3 or 4 times in the class where I was like cracking up laughing at her, but I was having a laugh with the lads. We were also doing a really playful movement. It was the Rolling Candlesticks Day. And I was like, that's a great hour. And as you read through that, it's like, that's what it sounds like. That's what it feels like. I know not every class, like we said, is going to be like that. But I'm wondering then, James, when you're coaching, is there ways that you try and ensure that you inject fun into a class? Is it something like, I'm going to make today more fun? Or is it something that is down to your mood on the day?
That is a good question. I think there's definitely an element of both. There's days where, yesterday, as an example, we had the combine sprint, that agility stuff. And we know that there's a general reluctance among a lot of people where they're like, this isn't really why I signed up here. And I was like, there has to be an element where I make this, like, we're going to get some progress out of this. It's not a silly drill. There's a clear purpose behind it. So I have to hammer that thing home. But then there's a definite way I can coach it, an energy I can bring, and an excitement that I can try bring to it through me to make it feel more fun as well. And what I very deliberately try and do with stuff like that is I don't coach it initially. I just let people have at it. I show them, and I maybe go, yesterday what I did was I showed them the drill. I spend the next 3 minutes alternating with your partner. Just try to get your hands and your feet really well coordinated. Off you go. And I went, I didn't coach. I just went around going, how did that feel? Did you see how you did that? Oh, see the way they do this. And I just pointed things out. And then I think I had 4 coaching points for those cones yesterday, and that was it. And it was really simple drills to bring an element of focus to it, to make them better at it. And when people got better at it, they enjoyed it even more again. And it was all about laughing, being loud, pointing out how good someone is at it. And sometimes even in like a jokey kind of way, like with some people, like Darren Duffy, I have an amazing relationship with Darren Duffy. He's a legend and he's amazing at so many things. And then with certain things, he's a bit clunky. And because he's a joker and he's in the room, whenever he is clunky, I can kind of tease him a little bit very loudly and he responds to it well. But everyone else kind of goes, oh, Darren, even Darren struggles with this a little bit, and it makes everyone feel a little bit more at ease. And then I give him something, he gets better at it, and it can really fill the room. I try not to do that all the time because I don't want to pick on people, but there's definite ways where giving people freedom to go figure it out on their own can be really fun. And then trying to be kind of like what you said, a bit jovial with them and removing the seriousness from the thing.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah. And in preparation for this, I was going back over some of the old coaching notes I have. So we have to work on this side of our game as coaches, right? It's something that we say, we want to make this thing more fun. Mm-hmm. So then, a couple of years ago, I had to come up with a framework. It's like, what is entertainment in a class? Yeah. And we started coming up with the different ways that fun is like manufactured in this scenario, because we got to plan into it and we got to see, can we make it happen more often? And I have 4 categories. And that last one kind of feeds into one of the categories, which is, I think of a slack line. Have you ever been on a slack line, Pat? Have you ever tried one of those balance things? You know, you stick in between 2 trees. It's like a 2-inch wide bit of fabric that you're walking along, and it's a balance thing.
I ran across a wall that was probably the same, but
well, this thing was one of my favorite things to practice. So if I had an afternoon where I had no work and it was free and the sun was shining, that's, I would love to sit around with people slacklining, because it's one of those things that it's just fun practice, and you just get a little bit better every time. And but you end up falling off the thing loads. It's a lot of fun, but there's a mastery element to it. But there's a real, like, there's a freedom, there's an autonomy, you're figuring out on your own. There's no like, this is the right way to do it. You have to figure it out. And I think that's the thing that you're saying about the football out in the field on your own, just practicing for the sake of the inherent enjoyment of it.
Yeah, it's the same, like you see people surfing, like they could be on waves for hours on end and it's,
and they're not winning any medals for it. Yeah,
and sometimes they don't even try and catch the surf, they're just sitting there on their boards doing what they like.
Yes.
Essentially that's the big thing, like that they like it, they enjoy it, they don't feel that they're being pushed into it anyway or whatnot. They're just, I get to do this.
Yes, yeah. And our version of that in the class is where a coach calls us in, gives us a few things to figure out, or a real complex thing to figure out, and then gives us 5 or 6 minutes to go and practice it. And if I think the danger for us, we slip into, we're in warm up mode, I need to save my energy for the workout. Whereas I think the best way to enjoy that is to say, I'm going to see, can I master the movement and get better and better at it, and use it as practice time. And because this is, you know, if we've left our sport behind, this is our sport now. So this is the thing we're trying to get better at. So there's one way in a class, I think fun comes into it. It might be hidden in hard work, but it's still, I think that the autonomy piece is important. Another way I have is, like, you might go and see a movie or a show, like, or watch Netflix. We do that for entertainment. That's what we'll choose to do a lot of time. But when we're going to do that, sometimes you go and see a comedy and sometimes a documentary. And I think both can be just as enjoyable. And there are some coaches, like I mentioned, Amy, who's hilariously funny from, you know, just drops a line in the middle of class and everyone's laughing, and that makes the hour more enjoyable. And then there's other coaches who might be able to tell a great story, like we talked about storytelling, James, and you're after becoming really good at developing, like you're on a journey from the first minute to the 60th minute. And then there's the documentary where we're learning something, we're seeing something in a new way. So I think it's not always just laughter, it's always something where we're just interested. And I think there are two ways that we can plan into the session. Then there's this other piece, which is the social side. Like sometimes we'll go for dinner or go for coffee for entertainment. And then we have to leave room in the session for people to chat. And yesterday was a great example. How often do you think about, like, the social side of things in a class?
Every day. Yeah, it's become an everyday thing. I'm like, where's the space for it today? And sometimes all they get is, if I have, maybe it's an erg workout, or I have ergs out for the workout, I'm like, first round free, 30 seconds on each machine, go as slow as you want, as fast as you want, and then the next round I pick up the pace a little bit, and it's maybe 3 to 5 minutes of ergs with some teeny tiny level of focus. But what I'm really doing is just letting people have their space and get moving as well, and I try and give them as little to focus on there as possible and go from there. So if I have nothing else in class, it's that. Other days, like even today as an example, there's dumbbell thrusters, and the way I had my coaching points laid out was, it was sharing a set of dumbbells. So if you and I were in a pair, you do 5 front squats, rest, we have a little chit chat, and then I do 5 front squats, rest, and it gave you the space to focus on the thing but also socialize as well. I think that's a really important part. It's something I always dismissed, but I recognize how much I value it in a class and how much other people value it. So I really try actively insert it in.
Yeah, and we have to leave room, right? Like when we're planning the class, if we jam the hour with drills, we actually have to, that's where we cut it out. So we have to say, I'm going to cover slightly less to leave a bit more room for the chatting. And because it's sort of like, I don't know about you, some days I go because there's people in class. Oh, they're in the class. I'm not sure if I'm going to train today. Oh, I'll go because they're there. Because they're going to get the chat and going to hang out and have a bit of fun. It's such a giant piece. This last piece then is competitive side. Like competition is fun. And I saw it yesterday with those combine sprints, pairing people up, and they were timing each other. And they were competitive with themselves. Like I encourage everyone, just beat your own score. But the person who was like doing the timing in Smithfield last night were screaming at each other. And it's the first time I'd seen that in that gym. I was like, oh, this is a whole different gear for these people. They were pushing each other so hard to get competitive with themselves to beat their score. So I think there's a way to set up competition that's not such high stakes. I think yesterday was an example of that. So what about you, Pat, when you're coming into a class, is there a plan and then a mood that goes with it, or what way do you normally approach it?
In some ways, yeah. And I think we can kind of set the tone essentially from our brief in how we deliver it, how we communicate it, but also in how we interact with people. And like yesterday was like, what's a combine sprint? And not a combine harvester. Correct myself there. Very well. It's fair as anything. But yeah, no. I'll try to get my thought back here. It was very much something that I will subtly kind of try and arrange within my session, but there is that time where you just kind of let it foster. And it might be transitioning between drills. It might be that rest mm-hmm. period. And sometimes I think I've seen a couple of your videos, James, where someone just kind of gives you an answer back when you're explaining something and you just roll off that and it just kind of flows. So yeah.
I think if you have the intention of having fun yourself, I think that's for me the things. Like if I'm enjoying myself, then like, I don't know, when you go out for dinner and there's people arrive who are there to have fun, it becomes fun. So I think like there's definitely, I can see days where I'm stressed out, I'm tired, and I'm the problem. I'm the one not bringing the fun. Do you get me?
Yeah, definitely. Whereas,
so when we actually bring that into the group, I think it has to start with us as saying, I'm gonna have fun no matter what it is today. And there's lots of categories of it, but I got to make sure that it's in there, because if not, the whole thing becomes a bit miserable, doesn't it, over time?
Yeah. I deem myself a funny individual. I'm someone that kind of does kind of lighthearted situation. But yeah, I think there's times where even if we're having that stressful kind of day or something like that, it's, can we just let our guard down? Can we relax? And I think sometimes we get hyper-stressed in terms of like, oh, someone cut me off in traffic, whatever, X, Y, and Z. And it's like, right, let me just take a dial back. Let me switch off and even dabble in fun. Like, it doesn't have to be that wholehearted, I laugh, but it could be that thing of like, yeah, that actually was actually not too bad. And it could just be turning up for the workout. It can be Finn lifting, being like, oh, geez.
Yeah. That nearly went. And it's being that lightheartedness, isn't it? Yeah. Bringing that in. Like, I know I was driving into Smithfield last night for that class, and I had a very long day yesterday. And I was going and going, geez, where am I going to find energy for this today? And there was a switch in my head was, okay, I'm just going to get really involved with every individual in this class. I'm just going to coach it, like whatever about the plan, whatever I cover, I'm going to cover that, and then I'm just going to go get really one-to-one, and instantly everything went, that feels better immediately. And then I did have a really good couple of sessions then as a result. So there is that little check we need to have. I also think I have to do that in my training when I'm going to class. Some days I'm like, fuck, I better get down, I've got 1 hour now, I'm going to jump into this. And it can feel a bit like of a chore some days. And I have to have that little pause, like, here, this is, I get to do this. Mm. You know, there's days where I miss this. I get to do this. I got to go and enjoy it. So there is that gear shift that I think is really important, because there is a decision to be made every time.
Something I've been looking at recently, actually, is this idea around group flow or social flow, because you've brought this to my attention. And it made me think, like, what are the things that I enjoy doing the most? And one of my favorite things in the world is going to watch the rugby, like go to the stadium, watch the match. And one of the most enjoyable days I've had was one of the most terrible matches we've been to, which was the Italy-Ireland game we went to in the summer.
Yeah.
And what made it so good was the fact that there was just six of us that fucking went.
It was so good.
There was Miguel and Amy and Jose, who have never watched rugby ever before. So we're there in toners beforehand and they're like, what's going on here? The Wales-France match. Like, and I remember so much about that day so vividly. And it's like, what makes things fun is like the group experience around it. And even concerts I've been to, it's like whenever you get so sucked into where you are, being present in the moment, you forget about the phone. That's what makes the thing. So when I'm planning four classes, I'm almost like, how can I facilitate a concert-like feeling or a thing. Like, and it's not that I'm a performer trying to get it going. I'm just like, can I give a couple of people a little bit of energy? Like Darren Duffy is a perfect example. And you were like, if they have a little one-liner, Darren is forever tearing me apart in front of everybody else. The best one he ever had was he was on the bike erg. And I was like, oh, can I borrow your bike for a second? And he's like, yeah, I'll just adjust the seat for you. And he pushed it the whole way down to the very bottom. Just to tease me about being a bit shorter. And it was like 18 people in the class and everybody roared laughing. And I was like, oh, that actually made the class way better. Because it was very serious up to that point. Just little things. But it's like trying to get that idea of fun into the class. And one of the ways that I actively try and do it is when it comes to drills. And I was listening to a podcast about social flow recently, and they were saying one of the things that kills flow in a group environment is when everyone's at a different level. So some people are left behind and the people who are out in front don't want to push any further. So then everyone gets stuck in this middle ground of meh. Mm-hmm. And one of the ways to avoid that is having drills and things that we practice that everyone gets challenged on and that everyone's able to do. And one of the hardest things in the world as a coach in a CrossFit gym like this is, well, how do you give people 4 minutes to go and practice something that they can all do? Because you have the Amy's who can do anything.
Yeah.
Like put it in front of her, she can do it. And then you have other people who can't. They're like, oh, this is my first day here. I haven't done anything physical in 25 years. You're like, cool. So trying to organize that in a way is super hard. And science has shown science that the group flow is just one of the most enjoyable activities ever. So the drills and the way we create them are one of the easiest, yeah, easiest but hardest ways to manipulate fun into our class.
Yeah, for sure. So where I'll leave it is this last piece, which is the bit that we all can take a bit of action on, which is the relationship side. If you don't know the people in your class, it's much more difficult to have a great time. Whereas if you have a really strong relationship, that's where the fun really starts. So keep introducing yourself to people when you're in your class. Keep going over it. If you don't know someone, that's where the fun could be today. Go and get to know someone new. And like that Darren Duffy story, like it's only because you and Darren know each other so well that sort of stuff can happen. So yeah, keep going, say hello to everybody. And that's where the groups become much better over time. Okay, let's get moving on to a recommendation. I know you all brought something to recommend everyone today. Pat, I'm going to start with you. What have you got for us?
Yeah, so it's an actual ongoing series at the moment on Disney Plus. It's called Shogun.
Shogun?
Yeah, so Rotten Tomatoes gave it 100%.
Really? And is it new?
Yeah. And it's a samurai series. And growing up, loved Japanese culture, loved the whole thing of samurais, and it's very kind of close to it. I think it was a book that they've taken to the series, but I just think it's amazing just how they film it, how it's done. It's all in Japanese, so not too dissimilar from Kerry in terms of that. You won't understand it, but there are subtitles. But very good. Another one I'm watching at the moment is The Gentleman on Netflix.
Oh,
yeah, that's good. It's about like a drug empire, but they make it very sophisticated in London. It is. It's like a high class drug environment.
What's it called?
The Gentleman.
Right.
What's his name? He done Lock, Stock, Two Smoking Barrel. That director.
Yeah, that guy. Yeah,
and Snatch. Guy Ritchie.
Guy Ritchie,
yeah. So it's him. And it's,
right, okay.
It's one of those. It's kind of very like Snatch and all that. So
Shogun was an 80s thing, wasn't it? 70s, 80s thing. I think it must be a remake of it.
No. This was a book.
Yeah, but I think there was a series way back in the day. Yeah, Shogun. Because I think,
yeah.
But I think, if I remember right, I thought Bruce Lee was meant to be in that. But it might be that old. Even then, he lost the part or something.
Yeah.
But maybe I'm mixing it with something else.
Yeah. Like, but there's 3 episodes out so far.
And where do I watch this?
Disney Plus.
Disney Plus. Okay.
Box, depending on which one.
Okay, that's a good shout. Yeah, okay. I just looked it up here and I saw that the reviews are whopper. Yeah, daily. Right, James, what have you got for us?
I'm trying to remember what I've got for you because I didn't write it down.
No,
I am blanking.
I'll go next then.
I'm trying to find it.
So I'm gonna, if you've got like 10 minutes, I've got a recommendation to read a short story. I've been into my short stories recently.
Well, not that last one that you posted on Instagram, because that fucked me up for a week.
Yeah, that's what the point of them is, isn't yeah. it?
Is
the
it?
Point, yeah, the point of them is that...
In I know, I read a lot of books and I've these, never felt like that.
Well, all these short stories that I found like a website with like the 43 greatest ever short stories, right? And I've been working my way through them. And they all have this like very short but hard punch at the end of them. Yeah. They all have this very simple story. And then the last paragraph, it kicks you in the face with an idea. You're like... What just happened? It twists, and it twists your mind for a week, and it really makes you think. That's why I like them, because I get this like really good writing, because they're all usually they're by people who are really famous novelists, and then they go and write a short story. So you get this like the tightest version of them, and that you get one simple idea that comes out of it. So this one is from J.D. Salinger, who was Catcher in the Rye guy. He was like a really famous author who wrote this really famous book when he was very young, and then went into like, he was like a recluse. Nobody heard from him for years. And he wrote this short story called A Perfect Day for Banana Fish. Right. Now it's another one of those ones. You're like, it kind of fucked me up. It still is. Like when I still think of it, I get a really uneasy feeling when I think of it. Because of the ideas in it. But I don't know, there's something about these short stories that do something to me, that kind of open up a part of my mind that's not my usual gear. And I go, oh, how did that have that effect on me? And if you've got 10 minutes, it's worth the read. Just because, like, for the writing alone, there's just something about the pictures he paints are so clear and simple. And then there's this punch at the end where you're like, is that what I think it is as an idea? And you're not quite sure, but you've got this uneasy feeling. So I would recommend it. Yeah. A Perfect Day for Banana Fish. Did you find it?
No, I didn't.
So do you want
I can't
to skip
remember
it?
What it was I recommend. But I am going to recommend something. Okay. I'm going to recommend doing something. And you got the team. You did this for Bua. You got the team to do it. And our friend Logan has been talking about it on his Leadership Lab thing as well. And it's generating a point of view of the world, because I sat down and I did this on my own, and I'll try and explain it as best I can. When Logan asked us to do this in a group, what he said was, it's not like your beliefs, it's not your core values, it's not your beliefs, it's not facts that you believe in. It's like, what do you believe that other people could and probably do believe the exact opposite? But in order for them to sway you into that way of thinking, like, they'd have to really, really sell it to you. Like, we even spoke about this yesterday, where we were talking about how we work here, like the whole BUA programming thing and how we coach. And you were like, I have to question it all the time. And I said, you'll have to do a really hard job to sway me away from the way we do it right now, because I've done it so many other ways, and this is the only one that has worked for me so effectively without beating me up at the same time. And it's only one where I feel like I can really express myself as a coach, but also be really effective. And there's just all these things that I'm like, I believe this is the best way to train. And I have lots of things that I do believe that most people listening to this probably agree with as well, but there's probably also people out there who might disagree with it.
Have you got one?
Yeah, I have some here. One of the ones that I believe we went through this in our team meeting. There was me, Jose, Amy, and Miguel that day, I think. And one of the things that I wholeheartedly believe, and you'd have to really try hard to convince me otherwise, is that if you have someone in your corner 100%, that your life can 10x, 100x, 1000x, just get better in every way imaginable. So to give you an example, when I started seeing Jillian, I had certain beliefs about myself. I couldn't do this, I couldn't do that, I won't ever be able to do this. And she just kind of, in a really nonchalant way, dismisses things. And Darina is probably very similar to this as well, where she's just like, of course you can do that.
Yeah, that's nonsense.
Just go ask. Or just go try. And sure, if it doesn't work, it doesn't work. And I'd be there in my head, like overthinking it. And she's like, no. That you got this.
Yeah. transformative effect.
And just whenever she says it, I'll look in her eyes and there's not a flinch, there's not a flicker, there's not a, you know, when you can, sometimes you question, it's like, are you having me on here? And whenever she does it to me with certain stuff, I'm like, oh, like you really mean this. And it gives me this boost that I'm like, right, let's go. And I've seen it on the gym floor as well, where I tell people, I'm like, you can go heavier, 100%. And there's no doubt in my mind as to what I'm saying and how I believe it. And people will look at me and they'll stare at me. And they'll be like, right, okay. And if I didn't do it, and that's a small microscopic thing, but I've seen then they go a little bit heavier and then they start trying a new thing and then. And the act of belief around going heavier on the dumbbells has led to promotions, new relationships, like all the things. And it's something that I've just seen so many times in the past number of years that I'm like, to say you don't need someone in your corner, that blows my mind. I'm like, that, yeah. No way.
So that drill that you're saying is to come up with points of view that you have that you feel like, I know it's true.
Yeah.
And it might even be hard for me to prove it.
Yeah.
Because it's just a point of
view.
It's
anecdotal.
Yeah. It's like, it's just what I believe. Mm. But I definitely believe it to be true.
Yeah.
But, and it may be a little controversial.
Maybe. Like, another one I have is improved health and fitness will improve every other aspect of your life. Like, if you're a fitter person and you sleep more and you eat better, you'll probably also be better at work in your profession. You'll probably be a better husband, brother, father, sister, son, the thing. I wholeheartedly believe that.
Yeah, absolutely. Like, I have one similar, which is, and I know this is the kind of controversial one, which is, doesn't sound that controversial, but I know because I get pushback on it. When I say it, people go, oh yeah, but, and they give me lots of other reasons why it's not just that. And it's, I believe, like, having stronger legs is a confidence superpower.
Yeah.
When I say that, people go, yeah, but what about upper body? You know, like having, like being
bigger
strong,
biceps.
Upper body. Yeah. Like, say, that's what gives me most confidence. And other people are saying, what about the, why the legs? Mm. And like, for me, I've felt it myself where I haven't trained my legs in a while and I don't have my legs under me.
Yeah.
And there's something really profoundly destabilizing about that. I've seen, like, my mother, when she starts doing some strength training and her legs get stronger, something profoundly changes about her demeanor and about her outlook. So when I see people getting their leg strength, there's a transformation. I don't think they necessarily link to their leg strength, but it's coming from it. And most of the people listen to this train their legs all the time, so you just don't know a world where your legs are not strong. But when I see people with strong legs or something about it, you're like, yeah, but I know I can probably clean really heavy things that most people can't. And there is something about that really sells. So I think that's it's a hard drill. I found it.
Yeah.
Getting your points of view written down, I found it really challenging.
It's really difficult.
And Logan gave me a lot of help with, like, how to arrive at it. I wrote loads of things down. It was like, that's not really a point of view. That's not really controversial. That's not. And it took me a while to get to that list of like 10.
So I have some things that I can do to help people here. So first thing is, you have to set constraints. So in order to really get after this, there have to be certain criteria that it fits or doesn't fit into. So the first one is, the point of view must be a belief about the world outside of yourself or your team. Second one is, point of view must be unique, remarkable, and or disagreeable. So someone should be able to disagree with it. The list can't be refined. You can't go looking for this word, not that word. It's like, it kind of have a more general thing is almost better. And then the list must have more than 10 points of view. And I think I actually only have 9 on mine at the minute, but I do need to create a few more. And then it's write down the unedited list, allowing space for both profound points of view and small details that might seem funny or inconsequential. And like, Logan has his list here in this email, and one of them is, fitness is almost free. And the almost is in brackets. And this is someone who owns a number of gyms and has done many, many fitness seminars in the past. And he's like, the fitness is free.
Yeah. You can find programming wherever you want. You can go out and get fit wherever you want. That's not what you're paying for.
Yeah.
That's an interesting one. Yeah. Yeah. So it's a good drill to do. It's difficult. But when I would have went into that thinking I'm really unopinionated. That's my problem. I don't have many strong opinions. I'm a bit like, always like, well, there's this side and there's that side. And there's, you know, I'm trying to balance everything up.
And there's virtue to that.
But then it's like, but where do you stand? Yeah. Where do you stand? So it was really challenging for me. But then when I did it, I was like, oh, actually, this helps me become more aware of where I am in the world and how I relate to everything. So yeah, that's a good recommendation. Not an easy one. Jeez, you dropped the bomb there. Pat, I want to talk shout outs. Have you got someone for us?
Yeah, well, it's two people, but they kind of come as a package. So I kind of really have to give it to Damo and Paul the last 2 weeks, especially the open. Like, James laughing.
They come as a package. It's so perfect.
Like, their color coordination of all black train outfits, like, matching stuff. But they are, like, we've just spoken about fun. They are the epitome of what fun is. Like, Damo is a 4-year-old man with a 5-year-old sense of humor. Like, he'll clean a bar by and he'll look at you and be like, "Did you see that?" And like, myself and Gillian have spoken about it, especially just in terms of like Boo and Ace in general. And you've probably seen the stories the last 2 weeks when the boys have come up, the interviews with the lads.
Yeah.
And there is that air of competitiveness with him just to be better than the other ball men.
Yeah.
But like, their own training, they've started doing the build mobility stuff beforehand. We do kind of drag them in from the lobby on the Friday just in case there's snacks and stuff there before their heat. But they're amazing characters, like, just to have in the gym. That, like, they're really helping with the half six crew who are a lot of beginners, and they're just kind of pulling them all into like that sense of it. They're bringing enjoyment to the half six, and I think Gillian with Hester as well, but they're also trying to push on their own training at the same time.
Yeah, yeah, mega. And I hear Gillian talking about them all the time as well, so they're obviously
she's
doing
like a proud
something
mother.
And they're there from the start as well. It's really, really cool.
Yeah, and they like they have a massive friendship thing, like, because I assumed that they were two friends that joined together. And it was like, I think when they were in the previous gym, they'd both done whatever the trial process was there. They got to know each other from there. And ever since, like, it's just been a bromance. I think Damo probably talks to Paul more than he talks to his wife and vice versa. But like, I've been told that they'll text each other during the day. It was like, are you going to half six? Yeah, I'm going. It's like teenage girls texting. And it's just a joy to see them at half six every day they're in.
To be delighted with that.
Yeah.
Okay, deadly. Right, we've got some would you rather. Okay, James came up some whopper ones this week.
Did I?
Yeah. Okay, first one. James, let's start with you. Would you rather live 200 years in the past or 200 years in the future?
In the future.
Pa?
The past.
Fuck.
No, 200 years ago, is that 1990s or 1980s?
Yeah, when does this put us? So this puts us in 1824. Oh, Jesus. 1824. And are we somewhere, James, on this? Or same anywhere? Place. Same place. In Ireland in 1824. Oh, Christ. Like, everything in me wants to say the past, but I know how miserable it would have been. I'm going to go future, which could also be hell on earth.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. I'm like, the apocalypse could happen now.
Like better the devil, you know, eh?
I know, and that's there was a part of me wanted to say past because there's at least a sense of certainty. It's that you go back and we know roughly how things work out, but it's also, you're going back to probably 6 days a week, 14-hour working days, probably in a factory, I'm probably going home. There's no central heating.
Even pre-factory. You're talking it? Out in the fields, toiling in the fields. Gee, every
even
day.
Even worse. Like, you've no shower, no
toilet.
Yeah. Where I'm kind of hoping in the future, I know maybe Elon Musk takes over the world and everything is SpaceX and Tesla-esque and at least it's all fancy. If nothing else.
Fancy and fascist.
Yeah, everything works. Yeah, 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 yeah. Like, we have one ruler taking over the whole world, but at least like you're clean and comfortable. So, yeah, I think the future.
Future. Okay. So, Pat, why the past? I'm interested in this.
Yeah, I think you kind of look at what we have now. Like, we've built up cities and, like, you go 200 years into the future. like, where's your greenery? Where's your sense of nature? Where's, like, I know 200 years ago, industrial revolution and whatnot, but simpler times, less yeah. distraction, like rolling a stick down the field was fun. How you roll a stick down the field?
Rolling down the field, yeah. That was the fun.
Yeah. But it's like you said, there is more certainty. It's, you know what's there, but it's also, like, I'm always someone that likes, loves the countryside. Mm-hmm. So you've plenty of that. You don't have to go to Dublin.
There's a real appeal to that, though, isn't there? Yeah. Of the simpler thing, isn't there? I think there's a real appeal. And that's why I'm like, yeah. And I also love history. So it'd be really interesting yeah. to be back there.
Yeah. And you see now, like, doctors are prescribing nature as a medication, essentially, to
yeah.
stress and everything. So 200 years ago, what was stress?
Joe. Yeah, I wonder because maybe it's like I can't find food today. Like, that's real stress then on the other side, isn't it? Like, if there, I'm sure the poverty levels were way higher.
In saying that, the Shelburne Hotel was opened in 1824. It's 200 year anniversary.
Oh yeah,
cool. So, like, all of Stephen's Green is probably very similar.
Yeah.
Yeah, so there's an element of it where you're like,
maybe it'd be fancy and nice.
Yeah, maybe I'd be the person who opened the Shelburne.
Maybe you would. Or maybe you'd be the guy who tries to clean the toilets every day. And they're like, that's also the case. Because there was certainly no gyms back then, that's for sure. I think the first gym was in the late 1800s in Ireland, and that was in Phoenix Park. So God knows what we'd be doing. It's a tough one, though, isn't it? And I wonder, does this speak a little bit to optimism versus pessimism? Sorry, Pa. Like, yeah, because there's definitely elements of, like, this current day that you're like, if that keeps going the way it's going, that's going to get awful. Like, the whole social media thing and AI, like, who knows where that leads us. Okay, well, there you go. We've decided. Right. We've got one more. All right, this one is awful. Did you say 24 hours?
Oh, yes. Sorry, now I remember.
So for a whole 24 hours, would you rather have the hiccups or have the constant feeling of you're about to sneeze?
This is kind of a better the devil you know again, because I've had the hiccups for a long time before, like maybe 4 or 5 hours, and that was torture. But feeling like you need to sneeze because you stop everything. Oh, I don't know.
Come on, pick one. You gotta rather one.
Sneeze. I'd rather feel like I need to sneeze.
Okay, yeah. Pa, what are you gonna go for?
I think I'd go the same. It's, I'd get great humor in front of a mirror just staring at myself trying to sneeze. The theatrics of it all is kind of the selling point for me.
But you'd have to imagine that, because I'm the same, I think. But I think that's because I quite enjoy a good sneeze.
But you never get it.
So was it's it would be way five worse. A day. What would you say? 5 a day. I don't know. The hiccups drives me absolutely round the twist. I really hate it. But the sneeze thing, I wonder. Maybe, remember we were talking about that poet David White? Yeah. And he has a poem about the best time in life, our best, most enjoyable moments are right before we get to do the thing we want to do. Yeah. It's that just slight anticipation. The morning before you go on holiday is the best part of the holiday.
Yeah.
Because you're like, we're on holidays. And I wonder, do you just feel like, amazing, I'm like, I'm about to sneeze.
Well, that's what I was thinking. I don't think, you know, when you have the hiccups and then they go, you don't notice when they go.
Yeah,
it's always someone goes, oh, the hiccups are gone.
Yeah, and then I always get a panic. Oh, Jesus, I've just thought about it. They're gonna come
back. Oh, they're gonna come back. Exactly. Yeah. So imagine you went a whole day hiccuping, you're not even be able to sleep properly, and then they go, you'd be on edge for ages. Whereas if you felt like you need to sneeze all day, even if it's irritating, you know, you're either going to sneeze at the end of the day.
Or you can make yourself at least.
or you're like, oh, the next time that happens, I bet it'll feel amazing. Yeah, there'll be something to it. Yeah, 100%. Oh, the sneeze all
day. We figured it out. We figured it out. Okay. Jesus, we talked some amount of shit today. Thanks, lads.